are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Feel for you, except for I want to win money, so I don't really care that much.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that, but...
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So I don't know if you guys said that or not. I drifted off for a moment in my own stat searching.
No, I didn't say that because I hadn't seen that tweet, but...
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So despite the fact that Chase Headley is not hitting nearly as high an average as Yunel Escobar. Yunel Escobar is not a very good human being on top of that. And
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 254 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing wonderful, my friend. I actually got some content that should be out on the site today, so I'm excited about that. And I'm just keep trying to dodge bullets because this new 10-day disabled list was meant to keep throwing jabs at me, I guess. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, you are in our NFBC league that we're in together. You are getting absolutely worked.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I want to do is sound like somebody who makes excuses, but when a month ago I got done drafting a team and all 50 guys were healthy, and now I have 35 left, it does seem a little much.
Yeah, and unfortunately in that league it is a draft and hold, so there are no trades. There are no waiver wire pickups, so you are definitely running thin. So I feel for you, except for I want to win money, so I don't really care that much.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that. But when I look at my lineup and I see Albert Almora and Jet Bandy as a third catcher that I have to play in my lineup, it is a little ugly. So
yes,
I can't wait for Martin Prado and Ian Desmond to get back, because then I will suddenly feel like the 1929 Yankees.
Definitely. Joining us today is a good friend of mine, someone I got to actually meet and hang out with when I was in New York, and that is Andy Singleton of Fantrax, a new affiliation. Andy, how you doing?
I am pretty good, and you are correct. Once you meet somebody in person, it's a whole new ball game. So hello, gentlemen. I, of course, am with Fantrax now, which is new since the last time I appeared on the Fantasy Benefits podcast. So, yes, thank you for making that distinction. I just want to piggyback real quick on a couple of things that were said. I forgot what the second part was, but this new 10-day DL, it sucks for fantasy baseball. Even more so does the 7-day DL, which Buster Posey is now on.
Mm-hmm.
So I just needed to get that out.
Well, I think it's something that's really interesting, and it's something we talked about prior to the season starting, and didn't really have a clear understanding of how this was going to affect people, except for that we thought we would get a few more DL stints. But I think this is something leagues are going to have to adjust to in the future, because I'm in a league, it's a 12-team league right now, and it is we only have one DL spot. And I have four guys on my team and a couple of them that are, you know, in the undroppable area, even in a 12-team league, that are on the DL. And I'm kind of screwed because my entire bench is filled with DL guys right now.
Yeah. And you know what? You bring up a very good point about DL spots. And this has been a big issue for a lot of leagues I've been in for a long time, whether it's one, two, four, whatever the number of spots is. But the bigger issue I'm having right now is, as I mentioned, I got Buster Posey, who's now in the 7-day DL. The next available time in this particular league for me to pick up a catcher through waivers is Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to now make the decision. Do I want to drop somebody on my active roster for a catcher to add Saturday just to drop him, you know, two days later when Posey comes back? It's just, you know, puts you in a precarious position.
Yeah, so. It really does. I'm in the same position in a league where Buster Posey, yes, went on the DL yesterday right after. I mean, we had Fab, I think it was Sunday night, and then Monday morning he gets put on the DL, the 7-day DL. Now, who knows how long he'll actually be on. It depends on when the concussion symptoms kind of go away. But still, yeah, if he's only there for a minimum stay, I've pretty much had Buster Posey sitting – in my roster because I wasn't carrying a third catcher in that league, in a two-catcher league. So I pretty much held him on all week and then get him back, and I just kind of lost out on stats for that position. It's definitely something that I think leagues are going to have to adjust to for 2018. Most leagues, you can't adjust your settings at this point, so you're kind of SOL.
Well, if I can interject for a second, I think one of the biggest thing owners have to do is they have to realize that a DL stint is not what it used to be, mm-hmm. because a lot of these 10-day DLs are timed. You know, if you backdate a 10-day DL, some of these guys are only missing 6 or 7 games. It for years now, when a guy went on the 15-day DL, you know, once the season began, especially, you know, you put your head down in your hands and you said, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And now, sometimes I think you can almost overreact. You know, it doesn't seem like really Gene Segura or Trey Turner. It seems like a lot of these guys wouldn't even be on the DL in years past. And so you don't want to overreact, you know, especially if you have acquisition limits or transaction limits in your league. You kind of want to plot and strategize and wait to hear more about injuries, because maybe you don't want to pick anyone up. Maybe you just want to, you know, lose the 5 or 6 games and hold on to the transaction for later in the year. I just think there's a lot of machinations going on now that we're not used to, that we'll be used to about a month and a half from now.
Yeah, completely agree. Andy, before we move on, give yourself some plugs about your stuff over at Fantrax, and also tell people where they can reach you on social media.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at People's Pen. That's People's with a Z. And I do the video content at Fantrax, and kind of am working my way into a larger role. And by that, I just mean, you know, with the promotion of the site as a whole. I've been a user for over 5 years of their service, and I have a warm spot for it. They have great ownership there, tremendous commitment to revamping the look and feel of the site. They've brought me in to do video stuff. They have an all new blogs with their own original content, which is something they never offered before. So Fantrax is really trying to become a player on the big stage, where I've already kind of thought they were, and now they're really just making that effort. So for all of those, for all of you who, you know, think there's some issues with the interface or the app in particular, I can assure you things are being addressed, and you will be pleased with what happens going forward. But yeah, other than that, I do the baseball show live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. My co-host Ralph Lifshitz, we bring in guests. We had Howard Bender on last night, and we answer viewer questions. We do it for an hour live. We stream it to YouTube Live, Facebook Live, and we're trying to figure out how to get Periscope involved as well, but we've had issues with that for the first 3 weeks so far. So check us out, and that's where you can find me.
Definitely will. I'm a big fan of Ralph Lifshitz. I'm also a huge fan of my boy Howard Bender, so I unfortunately was unable to watch it last night, but I'm going to go back and watch it on YouTube, because I love Howard Bender. He's a funny guy.
Well, you will absolutely love his appearance on this show last night then, if that's the case. And you mentioned you could go back and watch the replay. Absolutely, you can go back and watch the replay. We do it live Tuesday nights at 9 p.m., but then the video is there for you to watch and go back and do it on your own time if you want. The only downside to not watching it live is you can't ask your questions in real time. Mm-hmm. But you can always hit me up on Twitter or leave a question in the comments section, and it will be addressed. So, yeah, absolutely. Go back and watch the replay.
All right, we will. Let's jump into some recent news. This is all going to be kind of closer news. We're not going to necessarily go deep dive in this. We talked about it on Monday's show, so if you want to go back and listen to me and Joe Pitaleski of Baseball HQ talk about the Rangers' closing situation, they have officially made a move, I believe, and they are moving to a closer by committee. That's just breaking a couple minutes ago. Anybody have any thoughts on that they want to throw out there? Because I originally said that Jeffers was the guy that I would be interested in because he had closer experience prior, and I didn't know if they would throw Matt Bush into the role, but he has not looked good this season, as well as Sam Dyson. And to me, it seems like Matt Bush has probably got the best skill set and will win that role out of this committee.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I agree with you wholeheartedly on immediate presence, and Bush would be the guy I would target just for the skill set and the upside. But my dark horse in Texas, going back to last year, has always been Keone Keela. And I was really excited for him to be coming back from the injury he suffered, unfortunately, last year. But was a little surprised at the demotion he got based on, seems to be, you know, character issues. So somebody I'm still not willing to give up on, but I would stash the name Keone Keela away if you're looking for a closer in Texas.
Yeah, Keela was a guy that we talked about as well. But right now, he just, because of whatever he did in that spring training B game, he's not up. And so who knows if this trio of guys in a committee all fail, because they all haven't looked great so far, though Bush has looked the best out of the bunch. Keela would be a guy that I would probably stash in deeper formats. Chuck, any quick thoughts on this Rangers bullpen situation?
Well, you know, there is such a thing as false news on Twitter, but my most recent Twitter feed has reports of Matt Bush going to see a doctor for some shoulder impingement and some shoulder pain.
Whoa, I have not seen that at all.
You know, in my leagues, yep. So in my leagues, I mean, it went so far as to name the doctor himself, which I can probably get up for you if you would like. But the point being is that, you know, that shifted my attention greatly to Jeremy Jeffress, who, you know, has always been an overpowering guy as far as velocity is concerned. And he's was pretty successful the first two thirds of the season, you know, a couple years ago as a closer. So, and he was good as last stint in Milwaukee as a closer. So I guess, you know, my leaning right now would definitely be Jeffress based on those Twitter reports, but I would like to see some confirmation of that. And if you guys haven't heard, maybe.
I'm finding confirmation. It's he's expected to receive an injection for pain in his AC joint, something he dealt with last year on occasion. So they expect him only to be out for about 2 to 4 days, but definitely something to monitor. So maybe Jeffress is the guy for right now, and then if Bush can regain some health, Bush would probably take the lead on that role. Let's move into a guy that's already been named the closer. I think I'm becoming a little bit of the closer whisperer in my Roto write-up article, on my daily article on FanGraphs, because on Monday before they announced the news that Joaquin Benoit would be the closer, I kind of named him the closer over Hector Neris. Andy, what are your thoughts on Joaquin Benoit and the role in Philadelphia?
Same as Jamar Gomez, same role in Philadelphia. I want Hector Neris. That's it. Neris or bust for me.
But, I mean, whether you want it or not, Joaquin Benoit has the role. So do you think he can hold it for you know, a fair majority of the season?
I do. But he's also 39 years old now, and how much does he have left? For his role, I'm willing to gamble on it. I have been a big supporter of the Phillies this year, just as being a wealth of fantasy goodness. I think they're a little underrated in just how much they can produce, not only with their rotation, but with their positional players as well. So I like Philly more than probably the average person, but yeah, closer's a closer, you know. I want anybody in the role. There are no Mariano Riveras that exist, just one. Just Mo himself. Other than that, it's a crapshoot, it's a gamble. You see it with Texas. You see it with, you know, Philadelphia now. You've seen it in Seattle before. Edwin Diaz, who might be the closest thing to Mariano, by the way. But, yeah, it's a roller coaster ride with closers. So if he's in the role, sure, I'm taking him. I'll be happy to roster him.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Joaquin Benoit?
Well, I agree. You know, I knew he was 39 years old, and I know that he's never really had a closer role for any great length of time, despite being an excellent setup guy for all this time. So I'm guardedly optimistic. I think they're going to continue to use Neris against the best parts of the lineup in front of him, which will help get to him on occasion. And I just I think you don't have to necessarily be a great pitcher to be decent enough to hold off a team that's clearly just trying to protect the ARB number that they have to start with Neris. So I think there's not a lot of other candidates that I really like there. I don't really believe in Ramos that much there. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to roll the bones with Benoit and see if the 1.5 saves a week or so that the Phillies get can come to my rosters.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add to that real quick. You mentioned about him being a great setup guy. He was actually given the closer role. I forgot where it was.
Seattle.
Was it Detroit? Was it Seattle? I was going to say San Diego. He's bounced around, obviously.
You're right. No, I think it was Detroit, actually.
But he had been given this opportunity in the past, and I could have sworn I saw a report of something saying that he actually preferred the eighth inning over the ninth. So, I could be misquoting something there, but I don't know that he's necessarily fit for the role as closer. But like I said, a closer is a closer, and if he's in the role, sure, why not?
Yeah, I think you are kind of alluding to a really good point that I don't know that he's necessarily fit for the role either. I mean, Joaquin Benoit is a guy that has had issues pitching on back-to-back days. He only did it 8 times all of last year, where he pitched on back-to-back days. He had issues in Seattle with it, where they kind of refused to do it the year before. Last year, and only a few times in Toronto last year. I have a feeling that this will last for maybe half a season, and then they try to flip him. So I think at best, your best case scenario is that he holds the job until mid-July, and then he's moved in a deal, because the Phillies probably aren't competing this year for a playoff spot. I like the core. I think they're going to be really good in a year or two, but for this season alone, I don't think they're a playoff team, so I think they move him for whatever they can get in terms of prospects. He is on a one-year deal, one-year $7.5 million deal. So the fact that he can't pitch on back-to-back days very often, I think, becomes a detriment for people who want him. And I think Hector Neris starts kind of stealing saves here and there because of that. So I think, like Andy said, he's a closer right now. He's named the guy. He's pitched so far. He's pitched well, three clean innings. It's a guy that you can, roster with confidence for the next month or two. But after that, you may see them give Neris or somebody else the role if they don't want to enlarge Neris's arbitration numbers.
Justin, you said Philly won't make the playoffs. You were there when I stole the dollar from Lenny Melnick, who proclaimed the Phillies would win the World Series, not just make the playoffs, win the World Series. I hold that dollar in my pocket, gentlemanly bet we made.
I love Lenny Melnick, but let's be honest, he was drunk. he was talking about the only way you get noticed is if you make hot takes and they pay off. So that's when he proclaimed it. It's not going to happen. I think the team that wins the World Series comes from the National League East, but it's definitely not the Phillies. Let's move on over to the closer situation in Oakland. They hadn't announced that they were going to kind of give save opportunities between Casilla and Doolittle based on matchups when I wrote up these notes, but that is the situation now. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on this Oakland closer situation? Do you prefer Casilla or Doolittle?
Well, I would prefer Casilla, but in a number of my leagues, Casilla was gone and Doolittle was not. So, I picked when they said they were doing it by committee, I took Doolittle in a number of situations, and I'm happy that I have him as a third closer in a number of leagues, daily transaction leagues, etc. Obviously, the thing that's at play here is the fact that Doolittle is a lefty, and really, besides this Daniel Colom guy, he's really the only late inning lefty that they have. And so since they're going situationally and Casilla has pitched relatively well, I would much rather have Casilla because I think the opportunities for Doolittle to close are going to be fewer and far between. So that's where I land. I do think they're both relatively good. Doolittle's got the best skill set. basically throws fastballs, but his velocity is back up to before, when he was an effective closer, it's up close to that, in the 97, 98 range. So, but unfortunately, the way the situation falls, I'd rather have Casilla, who is ironically pitching very well now that he's not a Giant.
Andy, what are your thoughts on this situation?
You know, it's interesting to me because Ryan Madsen originally started out in this role, Doolittle had it, but couldn't stay healthy enough to keep it. They bring in Casilla, across the bay, and he's the same age as Madsen. Madsen hasn't really done anything wrong. It just shows you how good Casilla's actually been. He's got, he's faced 13 batters. He's given up basically nothing. He's walked one. He struck out five. So he's actually been really good. And he's had this role before. He's saved, 30 or more games back-to-back years going back to, the last two seasons. So what's really to be so afraid of? He's a closer. And he's risen to the top in that system. I'm happy with him. I added him a few places when, he got his first opportunity. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he just holds on to this job for the remainder of the season. So I would, going back to the Philly situation, I would much rather have Casilla than Benoit if we're, comparing and contrasting.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think I read somewhere, I should probably look it up. Should have just been looking it up while you were mentioning it. I think Ryan Madsen actually said he didn't want to close. And that's one of the he preferred to pitch out of the eighth.
Wait a minute. Didn't I say that about Benoit?
Yeah. So I don't know.
So maybe it was true.
he hasn't even gotten a save opportunity this year. I think that's what it was. Of course, and now I'm not finding it. But yeah, so I agree with you. As much as Casilla struggled down the stretch last year, his overall numbers were actually pretty good. He shows good skills. I mean, he has moments where he can be a tad bit erratic, and he has moments where, especially last year, where he gave up a few too many home runs, and that's kind of what killed him in San Francisco. But ultimately, the skills were intact, and there's no reason to believe that he can't hold down this kind of by-committee role. For me, Doolittle is just a health risk. I just don't know how long he's going to pitch, and so you add in the platoon and the fact that Doolittle has health issues, and for me, it's Casilla if I'm picking between the two. All right, that kind of wraps up our closer news for the first segment. Before we move on, I just want to remind people about our sponsor, and that's the Draft app. On Draft, it's draft day every day. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts, just like the ones at the beginning of your season-long league. They last for just one night and only take a few minutes to complete. On Draft, you can play for free, or better yet, play for money. Get this, your chances of winning money on Draft are almost three times more likely than chances winning on the other sites. If you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you absolutely should try playing on Draft. Download the Draft app now. Just search Draft in the App Store. It will come up first. Be sure to enter our promo code FWFB. When you download, you will get a 100% deposit bonus up to $600. Again, search Draft in the App Store and make sure you use our promo code FWFB. We definitely want to thank the Draft app company, Draft, for sponsoring this show. It's been great. I've enjoyed doing it. I've enjoyed playing the app, so hopefully they will continue on with us in the future. Let's jump right into our kind of our pick your poison game that we're going to play. And we're going to talk about who you'd rather have. We'll start with some speedsters. Brett Gardner, at least a day or two ago, was leading Major League Baseball in stolen bases, and everybody is kind of jumping on the Malik Smith bandwagon. So, Andy, which one would you rather have? Pick your poison.
Wow, I am blown away by Brett Gardner. I think he's by far – I love Malik Smith, just to be clear, and I think he's got a good future ahead of him. He's much better with the bat than people realize. They think he – just a steals guy, but he's actually, been a high average guy throughout his career so far in the minors. But Gardner is bar none the better player. I just didn't think he had steals left in him. And as you mentioned, leading the league through the first, I think he's got five already, unless he's stolen something since the last time I checked. But absolutely. Not only is he better, but I'm a Yankee fan, so not even close.
Chuck, pick your poison.
Well, I think you have to take Brett Gardner right now. Maybe my reasoning is a little bit different than Andy's. My reasoning is because once Colby Rasmus gets back in the mix in Tampa, I'm not exactly sure how much Malik Smith is going to play. Malik Smith is 0 for his last 7. He's 4 for 19 on the season. I'm just, I'm not enamored with the situation that he's in there. Because, you know, you got the Corey Dickerson as a DH. If somebody else pops out, then maybe Dickerson's going to have to play some outfield as well if they need to get a different bat in the lineup. There's just too many moving pieces around Malik's. And Brett Gardner is an established veteran who makes far too much money, like basically everyone that the Yankees decide to pay. He makes far too much money, and so they're going to keep him in the lineup, especially when he's productive. It is of note that Brett Gardner does not have an RBI on the season, and it's also of note that this might be the worst Yankee team of my lifetime. So, those things could affect, the long term on how it goes for Gardner. As far as, there was rumors that they were trying to trade him the whole offseason. I still think they would have preferred to trade him if anybody wanted him. And so, there is some long-term instability, but it's not as much as the short-term instability with Malik Smith and his role on the Rays. So you got to go Gardner.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Chuck, right there, because who knows what the situation for Malik Smith will be when Colby Rasmus is ready. I know Rasmus is starting to, kind of pick up his rehab right now, and I believe he's going to play in his first game, or maybe he did just play in his first game. So he should be back fairly soon. And they're a team that runs out a lot of platoons, and so it's not in Malik Smith's future to be on, even be on the 25-man roster here once Colby Rasmus comes back. I think there's a good chance he gets optioned because he would be another left-handed bat that they don't necessarily need with the way they're running their platoons right now. So, unfortunately, I think for him, his short-term future isn't looking very bright, especially considering as well as he's played, he's hitting .211, .318, .263 as his triple slash. That's not actually that impressive. He's just getting stolen bases. Gardner, I think, has a murkier long-term future because I believe Chuck is right, and they will move him as soon as they can. He's only got 2 years left on his contract, with a team option that's pretty affordable for 2019. So I assume if he can show health that some team will take a shot on him in the remaining 2 years of his deal, especially because they're not that expensive. It's $12 million this year, $11 million next, so I think Gardner gets moved, and so wherever he gets moved, the situation there will kind of determine what his value is. But for now, he's hitting leadoff for the Yankees. That's why he has no RBIs, and he's stealing, which is a really, really good sign for fantasy owners. And he was a guy talked about being kind of undervalued coming into the season, so I'm definitely reaping the rewards. And I hope if he's still out there, you should go grab him because there's no reason to think that he won't continue this.
Yeah, Mark Topkin also tweeted out the other day that once Rasmus was ready, Malik Smith would be the odd man out and likely demoted. So I don't know if you guys said that or not. I drifted off for a moment in my own stat searching.
No, I didn't say that because I hadn't seen that tweet, but it makes sense. And I think we both alluded to that would probably be the case. So let's move on and talk about our next pick your poison. And that involves another Yankee. It's Chase Headley or Yunel Escobar, both of which started out hot. Chuck, pick your poison.
Well, I don't really care for either player, to be honest with you. But Chase Headley has a smidge of power upside in his past, and he plays in a bandbox that is absolutely ridiculous to right field. He's a left-handed hitter. So, there's some hope for power. He's only taken 2 swings this year as a right-handed batter. So, and he's still hitting too many ground balls for my liking. And all this excitement about him you know, bunting and pushing the ball through the shift is not exactly fantasy excitement, although it's practically sound, you know, strategy on his part. So despite the fact that Chase Headley is not hitting nearly as high for as high an average as Yunel Escobar. Yunel Escobar is not a very good human being on top of that. And, you know, I guess you got to go Headley here. And, you know, there are situations that you run into in fantasy where these are the kind of choices that you have to make. So I certainly understand us playing pick your poison with these two. But Chase Headley at least has the higher ceiling, albeit he even has a lower floor since he's been virtually unplayable for the last 3 years that the Yankees have shoved money up his rear end.
All right, Andy, what's your choice in this? Pick your poison.
If you're picking between Chase Headley and Yunel Escobar, you are in a really deep league. And
yes, you are.
You are. Can I curse on this show? I can, right?
Go right ahead.
Shit out of luck. Well, shit out of luck if you're choosing between these two at your hot corner. With that being said, though, the Yankees have been chasing, no pun intended, Headley for over a decade now. They finally get him, and now they're getting the Headley that they long desired. I don't believe it. I don't trust it. I think it's a hot start. I think he'll cool off. And, you know, just going back to what Chuck was saying, yeah, sure, if I had to choose between the two, it's Headley. If by default, I'm a Yankee fan. If by another default, he's 2 years younger than Escobar. He's a better human being. He's a country boy. Throw him out there. They're all going to be personal related and not fantasy related because I don't want either of these guys.
Well, I think you guys are both wrong. One, Chase Headley is not going to even come close to keeping this up. This may be the hottest week we see all season from Chase Headley. He's you know, hitting .375, .483, .667 in the early going, but that's all supported by an insane 17% walk rate and an insane .438 BABIP. I mean, he's just getting lucky and getting moved, walked way too much. To me, there's no reason to think that Chase Headley is anything more than what we saw last year, which wasn't amazing, even though he actually chipped in decently with the speed. I'm going to go with Yunel Escobar because, one, he's hitting at the top of the Angels lineup. Now, while it's not a great lineup, it's a pretty decent, you know, first half of it. And if they're going to continue to bat him towards the top of it, you know, the power numbers aren't going to be amazing, obviously. You know, he hasn't hit for double-digit home runs since 2011. He doesn't really steal bases. But if he's hitting at the top of the run, top of the lineup, his OBP numbers, his, average numbers, and his runs scored, you know, could be interesting enough, throughout the season. Neither of these guys strike me as people you want to pin your championship hopes on. But if you're picking between the two, it's Yunel Escobar because it's a little bit more believable what he's doing than it is Chase Headley. Let's go ahead and move on to Miguel Sano versus Adam Duvall, some sluggers that went around each other in the draft. Andy, pick your poison.
Man, I like both of these guys, to be honest. I just like them as a fan-wise. Fantasy, you start digging in a little deeper because they can both hurt you, mostly with the K numbers. I'm looking at Duvall, though. I love Sano. I've mentioned many times I donated to El Pelotero, the sequel, which never was released, the sequel to the documentary made about him. So if you've never seen it, go check it out. And you'll like Sano yourself. Great guy. Easy to root for. But Duvall is just kind of like a movie script coming out. That, you know, career minor leaguer, then breaks through last year. Off to a tremendous start this year. I just have a hard time passing him up. I would take Duvall. I think even if it's, you know, by a small amount, he's still going to have a few less strikeouts than Sano, and I think he will steal a few more bases than Sano. So I would lean Duvall for those reasons.
Chuck, pick your poison.
I will take Miguel Sano quite handily, actually. I do like Adam Duvall. I will point out, though, that it's nice to have Sano eligible at third and in the outfield, especially when you're making moves this early in the season. I also think that the performance arc for Sano is on its way up. I wouldn't be stunned if within the next few years here, Sano has a 50 home run season. I think he has that kind of power. He's making great strides at the plate compared to what he was doing last year. Adam Duvall is a very good player. Obviously, he was in the home run derby last year and then stopped hitting home runs immediately thereafter. But, and you know, Duvall plays in a great park, you know, but still, as far as run production, I would rather stay in the American League and Sano batting in the middle of that lineup. And like I said, I just think he's on his way up, and Duvall has reached the top already. He's either plateauing or on his way down, to me.
Yeah, I'm with Chuck on this one. It's Miguel Sano, partly because he walks so much that he will offer production even when he's not hitting home runs. Duvall doesn't walk quite nearly as much. Walked about 6.5% of the time last season, and so that 297 OBP that he had last year is scaring me a little bit, especially in OBP formats. But the 241 average last year, you know, scares me in average leagues. So, I mean, I think they both have power, and I think both were underrated coming into the season. I think people were really jumping hard off of the Adam Duvall bandwagon, and while I understand why, because his power did kind of disappear a little bit after the All-Star break, I mean, it's not like Cincinnati has a ton in, you know, on their team that's going to replace Duvall if he goes through cold streaks. Are they really going to run Scooter, Jeanette, or Almeidas Alcantara out there? And I know people will point to some of the minor leaguers coming up, but they aren't that. The minor leaguers in the top of the Reds system aren't like world beaters. These are you know, guys that would probably be considered organizational depth at this point in their careers in other systems. So that, you know, I'm going to take Sano because I'm a big fan of his. I love the fact that he walks so much. I mean, he's already walking 14% of the time this year. He's shown 16% walk rates in the minor leagues and in major leagues as well prior. So I agree with Chuck too. I think Sano is going to hit 50 home runs one of these years. It's just a matter of when, not if.
I agree with both of you. I definitely could see that happening, but I don't think we're there yet. I think he's still at least another year or two away from that.
It's 40 possible,
would yeah. be 40 would be a nice sign this year.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and move on to the next one. We'll talk about Dallas Keuchel versus Felix Hernandez. Andy, pick your poison.
Keuchel. For me, it's just a question of health, and I think he's back to being healthy. It's hard to choose between these two guys for me, to be quite honest. It's kind of similar, but I would take Keuchel if I had the choice.
Chuck, pick your poison.
Well, I'm going to use the wear and tear factor as my tiebreaker here and also take Dallas Keuchel, which people can rightfully jump on me about because I thought Dallas Keuchel was overdrafted going into the year. You know, I still think that, you know, that he's a guy that, you know, needs to paint corners. And if he has the slightest setback in his health, it could really, really hurt him a lot. But none of those things, you know, I think Felix Hernandez is still adjusting to his lack of velocity now. And so none of those things trump any of the risk that I see with Felix Hernandez. So I would take Dallas Keuchel right now. And I feel about 70% better about him than I did in the drafting season, both seeing how amazing he was in the spring and seeing how red hot he is out of the gates. You know, you add in all that offense behind him, which is certainly more offense than Seattle has, and I think it's pretty clearly Dallas Keuchel in this situation for me.
Yeah, I'm gonna sweep it here. I'm gonna go with Keuchel as well, though there are things that are a tad bit concerning to me. Keuchel is not pitching within the zone, and I mean, that's something Keuchel's pretty much done his entire career, but he's getting away with it a little bit more than he should. He's only throwing in the zone 32.6% of the time so far this season. Last year, threw in the zone over 41% of the time. That is going to change because otherwise people are just going to start or just going to stop swinging. And that will lead to more walks and more problems on the base paths. I just, for me, it is about Felix. I just don't buy this, I don't buy the early season success. You know, he was taken out of the game the other day because of a groin injury, I believe, covering first base. So I know he was looking decent, but I just don't believe the health. I think people always forget that, you know, they had to re-kind of negotiate that huge contract he got in 2013 because there were things that popped up in the medicals. You know, they still signed the deal, so obviously they felt good enough about it, but the velocity has been down year after year. It's not it doesn't pretend to be good things for Felix Hernandez, and I'm just, you know, I'm not willing to buy it yet.
Just to add to that real quick, if I may, it's not so much the wear and tear. It's just he's been trending down. I guess it is the wear and tear. I mean, he's aged quickly, and you know, it gets made mention of all the time with Madison Bumgarner because of the extra innings, you know, throughout his playoff runs and World Series titles and whatnot. But, you know, Hernandez is kind of the same thing. With all the innings he's logged, he's trending down. It might sound a little out of the box, but I like to look at the whole package with teams. And I thought Houston was really going to be a playoff and World Series contender last year with all the talent they have, and they were completely derailed from that. And I look at their ace, who is Keuchel, having the poor season as the real reason for that. So with him being back on track, he's still the ace, whereas Felix Hernandez, you're looking at him as more of a number two in your rotation at the highest, and probably even more of a number three at this point. So that will be the, you know, fundamental difference that I would look at, an ace versus a 2-3 guy.
Yeah, I'm interested to see Keuchel's next start because I mean, so far it's only two starts, so extremely small sample size, but not striking out as many guys as he had in previous seasons. So definitely something you want to kind of monitor to see if those strikeouts start coming. Also, has you know, an extremely low BABIP, so that's going to obviously come up. But I do. I feel better. I feel better than Felix. If you look at Felix' fastball velocity over the last few years, I mean, he was throwing 96 in 2007, and it just slowly declined down to 92. And then last year, it was all the way down to 90. This year, if you look at the readings, it's at 91. But remember what Joe and I talked about. You know, heard something mentioned from Saris, is because they switched over to different reading equipment, everything's running about a mile an hour faster, and that would make up for about the 0.7 mile an hour gain on his fastball so far this year. So it hasn't gone up. It's just more than likely a hot gun. Let's move on and talk about Zach Davies and Tyler Glass now. When we talk about Brewers, we usually throw out this Chuck. So, Chuck, pick your poison.
I cannot grasp and never have been able to grasp the excitement about Zach Davies. You know, it's a great pickup for the Brewers because the Brewers picked him up for, you know, a couple-month rental of Gerardo Parra when Parra went to the Orioles a few years ago. But there is no reason to get overly excited in any way, shape, or form about Zach Davies. You know, I think he's a limited floor guy because he's a smart, know-how-to-pitch, hit-your-spot kind of, you know, little righty that looks like he just got his driver's license. But I would have to take Tyler Glasnow, and I don't really care for Glasnow either yet. I think Glasnow is probably a year away. This ridiculous command and control issues that Glasnow is having right now. But Glasnow pitches in a much better stadium to pitch in, and he has a lot of upside. He could go out and strike out 10, 12 guys on any given start, whereas Zach Davies is a more grind it out kind of get outs kind of guy, and I don't see much use for that in fantasy. It's a lot better real-life attribute than it is fantasy. I really don't think this is all that close, despite the fact that Glass now is a guy who could get blown up any start he goes out to the mound. But if he did put it together for five or six starts, he could absolutely carry your staff. And Zach Davies will never do that.
All right. Andy, pick your poison.
I'd like to say I could explain the Davies phenomenon because he's been one of my guys as well. I think he's more of a deeper league guy. He's kind of a, like you said, the baby face. He feels a lot younger than the 24 going on 25 he is. Good pitcher, capable pitcher. I'm really surprised by the horrendous start he's gotten off to. After, the opener for the season, I was advising to, stay the course with him. He'll straighten out, but didn't look any better in his second go around. So I'm starting to worry a little bit. I do agree with what was said, though. I don't think he's anything spectacular. But, streaming option, if you're in a deeper league, dynasty league, something like that, he's a good back end of the rotation guy. But I don't even think it's close to name value and upside that you have with Glass now. The only problem with Glass now is he's like Giolito. All the potential in the world, big guy, big frame, but tremendous control issues. And so far this year, he can't put it together and has been getting shelled. So, I don't necessarily feel comfortable with either, but if I had to take one, I'd still swing for the fences, and that would be Glasnow.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because for me, it's a matter of, are we talking about upside? Are we talking about floor usually? And which one would you rather have? And I mean, I don't think Zach Davies' floor is that much better than Tyler Glasnow's, and you guys have both mentioned Tyler Glasnow has a low floor and a huge ceiling. So, I mean, why, if Zach Davies' ceiling is probably that of a league average pitcher, because I don't see much more than that. I mean, you look at the projection systems, all have him for over a 4 ERA. It's not like he strikes out a ton of batters. He pitches in one of the worst parks in baseball for pitching. I just don't see where the upside here is for Zach Davies. I know people, think that he was, had some trendy prospect hype at one point. But for me, there's no upside and a huge amount of risk in Davies. The only reason you could say maybe you take him over Tyler Glasnow for me is if you're in a super deep, like an NL only, because Zach Davies, as long as he's healthy, is going to be pitching. But the quality of the innings, to me, is just a real issue. For me, Tyler Glasnow is I worry that in 2 weeks, if he's still struggling, the Pirates just decide to send him down and try to figure things out again. And that becomes the worry with Tyler Glasnow. So, but at the end of the day, he is one of the top pitching prospects in baseball still. He's widely considered an elite talent. It's just a matter of getting his mechanics in order and not walking guys. He pitches in a fantastic park in the National League. I love Tyler Glasnow. I still believe in him. I think he will get things figured out. It may not be this year, like Chuck mentioned, but it will happen at some point. I'm willing to bank that it happens at some point this year. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Yuli Gurriel or Justin Bour. So, Andy, pick your poison.
Okay. I don't know. It's a tough call here. I think Bour obviously has the upside with the power. I'm more worried about Gurriel because never really did anything at the major league level to warrant all the hype. Obviously, his international career was stellar, but he's aging. He's, could be considered already old or older for an everyday player. Not to say he's, he's closer to 30 than he is to 40, but point being, there is room to believe that maybe he is not going to develop into what people had hoped he would. And I think the leash is much shorter. I mean, as I was talking about with Keuchel, you have a team that has real playoff desires and hopes and dreams. They also have a top-end elite prospect, or at least, what has been built to be an A.J. Reed knocking at the door. They still have Travis White, who showed some flashes last year. Bregman's already been moved to third base to get him in the lineup every day. So I don't know that Gurriel necessarily has the leash that, you know, Justin Bour necessarily has. So for that reason, I think I'd hold out hope for Bour a little bit longer than I would with Gurriel. Gurriel's, you know, arguably droppable in many leagues. I'm seeing him, you know, being left on waivers in a couple leagues I'm in. So I would take Bour.
Yeah, both these guys are struggling tremendously to start the year. So, Chuck, pick your poison.
Well, Bohr's only hitting .158 over the last 7 days, and he's only hitting, you know, he's only hitting .130 overall. He has walked some. He's got 6 walks in 7 games. You know, the story about Bohr was that he's going to hit more against lefties this year. And supposedly, you know, that gives him a chance to be an everyday player, and maybe that helps his counting numbers. I don't really see it. Bohr's already 28 years old. You know, he's only got 5 at-bats against lefties so far this year, so we got a small sample size as far as that's concerned. But most people have not really projected him. He's a big swinging kind of guy who's not really prone to using the whole field like you like to see a lefty do against quality major league left-handed pitching. I think Gurriel is being dropped too soon in a lot of leagues. I've seen him dropped in leagues by me, and I'm keeping a very close watch on him because I believe that he could snap out of it and be quite good. So, you know, if you absolutely needed power, you know, Bohr is the guy that probably is going to figure out a way to get to around 20 home runs. But if you want an all-around baseball player who I think could hit upwards of 285 or 290 and contribute sort of a Eric Hosmer-esque line at first base while having third base eligibility from last year, I would much rather have Gurriel than Justin Bohr. You know, I'd rather have the American League West hitter than the NL East hitter almost in any given situation, but especially with the home park being the home of the rally cat from last night's games. So I'm going to go with Gurriel, and by quite a margin for me, actually.
Yeah, I think, you know, we all love projections. You know, when we're doing our ranks, when we're drafting, we're always looking at projections and projection systems. You know, I mean, but I think what we need to start taking into account is when projection systems try to project out on guys who've played in international leagues, whether it be Korea, whether it be Cuba, you know, or Japan, the projection systems don't have a great way of counteracting the level of talent that these guys were seeing. And while I'm sure if Gurriel had come over in his mid-20s or early 20s, we may be having a different conversation about him. I think the projection systems have fooled people into believing this guy had more power than he was going to show. Yes, he does actually have a really nice natural swing. You can see that when he's up to bat. But for the most part, I mean, I don't think this guy really has 15 home runs in his bat. And we know what Bohr is. He's not going to give you, you know, a ton of, you know, elite production in any category. But as long as he's healthy, he should hit for 20 home runs. He's going to, you know, hit for a livable average, especially at first base. You know, he walks enough to be a decent, you know, at least not a drain on your OBP. So, I mean, I like Bohr in terms of he's a stable commodity. You have no idea rest of the way what Gurriel is actually going to get. He should hit for a better average. You know, he should walk, you know, a decent amount of the time, you know, enough to, you know, not be a detriment in OBP leagues. But I don't believe this guy can hit 20 home runs at the major league level. He's already batting ninth for Houston. And like Andy mentioned, they have a ton of guys in their system, in the minor league system. Not to mention that, they've got guys on the major league club that are sitting for so this guy can get playing time. That's not going to last long if he continues to struggle. He doesn't have the upside to warrant them to kind of let him just keep taking swings. I wanted nothing to do with Gurriel coming into the season. I definitely don't want anything to do with him now. So yeah, for me, he's droppable. you know, in 12-team formats and really even 15-team leagues.
Can I just throw in real quick with Goryeo, since we're talking about him, and reason I was mentioning the age and why I find it to be so intriguing and consider him to be a little older. He's already out of his power prime, and to try to adjust to major league pitching at this age is kind of where he's, you know, behind the eight ball. That's kind of what I'm pointing to. One of the highlights for his career was his tremendous eye at the plate and how his walk to strikeout ratio was just ridiculous. He had, you know, in 15 seasons, walked 611 times and only struck out 428 times. I mean, that's just unheard of. Multiple seasons where he walked more than he K'd. Just ridiculous batting eye. It's a very small sample, but in his short time in the majors, though, he's striking out nearly four times as many times as he's walking.
He's swinging outside of the zone almost 50% of the time.
Well, that's just to my point. That's a huge tell that he's fooled by these professional pitchers in Major League Baseball. So, you know, you were talking about the projection models and, you know, how they get, you know, overhyped a little. You know, more recently we've seen stuff with the KBO and just kind of how we wanted to look at certain guys like Byung-ho Park and think this guy was going to be, you know, a Hall of Famer or something. I mean, I just think we were a little overhyped with Gurriel. I think he's at the wrong age to try to figure it out. And it's, you know, if the power's not there and he's not going to be as disciplined of a hitter as we hope, it's, you know, I'd rather take my chance with Bohr, who, by the way, Chuck, you mentioned he's already 28, as if that's old. So I'm feeling ancient.
Well, compared to Gurriel, who is almost 33.
Yeah, I'll take the 5 years.
Yeah, sure, I will too. Let's move on and talk about a couple of pitchers. We're going to start with Tanner Roark versus Michael Pineda, who was cruising on his way to a no-hitter the other day before it was broken up. Andy, who are you taking?
I like Pineda. Going back to the whole Yankee thing, I think, you know, he's going to give you a couple of these games, and then he's going to give you a couple duds. We broke down both Pineda and Tanner Roark, Ralph and I did, on the baseball show leading up to the season. And just, you know, my recollection of what we covered with both pitchers, I just think Roark is more consistent. And, you know, their numbers might look similar when it's all said and done, but I think Roark will get there at a steadier pace and should have a much lower ERA. Probably won't get near the number of strikeouts, but I'll take the trade-off with the total package. So I would take Roark over my hometown Yankee, Mr. Pineda.
Wow, I really thought you were going to go the other way on that one. Chuck, Roark or Pineda?
I will also go Tanner Roark. We've covered him quite extensively as well as an underrated pitcher going into the season, largely because they used him in a relief role that 1 year in Washington between his two stints of starting well. So people don't seem to have a full grasp of how good he's been as a starter over the last 3 years. And Pineda is a guy that very smart people in this industry have nicknamed Pinata, which I don't think is necessarily a very good sign. You know, he's toying with a changeup. His changeup usage is being tracked. Some people are saying that now, you know, he's going to have his own personal catcher because he seems to be doing better with Romine behind the plate than he was doing with Gary Sanchez calling games for him. People seem to make a lot of excuses for Pineda, and I think if Pineda was not a Yankee, I think there would be far less hype on him. And anytime you're going to ask me two pitchers that are remotely close, and one pitches in the NL East and one pitches in the AL East, I will take the NL East guy every single time, let alone a guy who pitches, you know, half of his games or conceivably more in Yankee Stadium, which I do think is a ridiculous place for a two-pitch, largely a two-pitch pitcher, to try and keep the ball in the yard. So I'm not getting overly excited about Pineda's last start. We've seen greatness from him before, and we've never seen anything close to consistency. So until further notice, I would have to go with Roark.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for strikeouts, obviously the answer is Pineda. If you're looking for anything else, the answer is Roark. I mean, Pineda, you know, and I got some shit for a misranking of Pineda earlier in the season, but it's not like I moved him up much farther. I think I had him outside of my top 90 starting pitchers, and the reason is exactly what we've seen so far from him this season, is you're going to have the game like he pitched the other day, or his last start against Tampa Bay at home, where he was just absolutely dynamic, only gave up two hits. One of them was a solo shot home run, but struck out 11 in 7 2/3 on the way to a win. But the start before that at Tampa Bay, a place you would think would be better for him pitching, he only goes 3 2/3, strikes out 6, but gives up 4 runs, you know, and it just, to me, the only encouraging sign so far is he hasn't really been walking a ton of people, or hasn't walked anybody yet this season, but there's just going to be so much volatility, especially if you play, you know, in a roto format, you forget, you set it and forget it, and hope that, you know, you can keep his ERA around, you know, 4.41, 4.42, and you just take the strikeouts. But, like, if you're playing in any head-to-head format, he could murder your week. You know, he could absolutely just destroy you in the ratio categories. He's a guy I've never liked. You just can't trust him week in and week out and game in and game out. You sometimes can't even trust him, you know, inning in and inning out. I mean, sometimes, you know, he's cruising through an inning, and then he just gets destroyed because he can't keep his stuff, you know, he has to come into the zone because he can't stop throwing balls. So for me, I want nothing to do with Michael Pineda. Tanner Roark, I think kind of the, you know, to throw out an old Matthew Berry, Nate Ravitz term, the hate, it went too far on him. People were expecting regression after last year, and obviously there was going to be some. He wasn't going to be a sub-3 ERA pitcher, but people were completely discounting what we saw from him last year, which I think was a mistake. Pitches in a decent ballpark in Washington with one of the best offenses in baseball behind him. The defense got better, you know, by adding Trey Turner to the mix. I think Roark is a guy that, while he's not going to be a world beater for you, he's going to be a steady source of quality innings throughout the year. You know, offer enough strikeouts that he isn't going to be a detriment in the category, and is going to win a lot of games and do it with decent ratios. So, I mean, I don't know what more you want from a guy like Tanner Roark. Let's finish out with two guys who were closers. And that's Raisel Iglesias versus Blake Treinen. And I'm doing this one because both you hate a guy on out of these guys. So I'll start with you, Andy. Pick your poison.
Well, I tweeted out, I think you're going to talk about me and Iglesias, because I tweeted out before the season started that Raisel Iglesias is not a closer. I still believe that, although, you know, he's looked better than Treinen to start the season. I think with Treinen, we all, you know, there's so many people talking baseball, fantasy baseball. Everybody's trying to outsmart the other guy. Coda Glover became the hot name. Then Treinen emerged during spring training, and that's all you were talking about. Sean Kelly was left by the wayside, even though it was supposed to be his role to start the season. News is, none of the three have looked particularly good. And going back to Coda Glover, who's the youngest of them at 24, seemingly could be the Nationals' future closer, he hasn't struck anybody out. He's faced 15 batters now. He has walked one and struck out none. That is correct. Zero, a donut, a goose egg. You're not going to get any closer role if you're not striking out batters. Kelly and Treinen both haven't been particularly good. The best guy in that bullpen right now is Joe Blanton at 36. So it's anybody's game. I'm not particularly fond of Treinen, but nobody's really challenging him for the role either. Whereas with Iglesias, while he's looked good, I don't think he necessarily has the skill to be a closer. Ultimately, I do think he is a good pitcher, but, you know, I don't know. I could be wrong on it. I think Michael Lorenzen is, you know, chomping at his heels in Cincinnati. So if I had to choose between the two right now, I would eat my words and I would take Raisel Iglesias.
All right, Chuck. You've been talking some shit about Blake Treinen, so go ahead and pick your poison.
Well, the issues that I have here in comparing the two, I got to talk a little bit about both players. The first thing about Trinan is I've almost never seen a pitcher who throws the ball with more movement than Trinan. Like, every single one of his pitches is diving all over the place. And it's very hard at times to get strikes that way because the catcher has to move to catch the ball. Doesn't seem like the catcher even knows exactly where the ball is going to end up because there's so much movement all the time. Even the clean inning that Trinan had, he struck out a guy on a pitch that was obviously a ball. I mean, it was wildly filthy, and it dropped about a foot and a half to 2 feet, in the second half of its, transition to the hitter. So, there's a lot to be said for how he's going to do it. He's going to do it with a really high whip. If Trinan holds on to the job, he's going to do it with a really high whip. And he traditionally has given up very, very few home runs because not only do all of his pitches move, but they seem to all move with a downward movement. So those are hard pitches to elevate. So I'm concerned about Trinan a great deal, and I own him in spots where I absolutely have to have him. So my concern and my fear is real. But my concern with Iglesias involves not only do I not know if he can do the job, but they're announcing that they're basically doing it by committee, and Drew Storen already has a save. Lorenzen is in the background, clearly been their best pitcher in the bullpen to this point. And Cincinnati is not a very good place to pitch in or a place where you're going to get a lot of save opportunities this year while they're in year two of their massive rebuild. So to me, these two players could end up with the exact same amount of saves, with Trinan holding the job for 2 months and Iglesias, rotating in and out of the role for the entire year. So this is a really hard decision for me to make on which one I would prefer if I was given the choice. I think I would probably take my chances with Iglesias because I think Trinan has been that shaky. And of course, he comes off a year where he had a terrible whip last year as well. So I think Trinan is on the team that's not going to be very patient with him overall. He might get a 2 or 3 rough outing kind of leash, but I don't think they're looking to procure a long-term role for him as much as they are to win this year, whereas Iglesias has more of that in his favor. He's a young pitcher, and they're trying to carve out a role and use that incredible arm. So I would probably take my chances with Iglesias, but I would not feel good about it.
Yeah, I think I'd go with Iglesias too, just because he's looked better in the role. I mean, I know they're going with some sort of committee, but I mean, Iglesias has already gotten 3 saves in 4 appearances. I like the fact that they're using him in a multi-inning kind of way, where they're letting him go out there and just throw instead of, just bringing him in the ninth. They're seeing guys in trouble, they're bringing him, then they're letting him close out the game. He's got good strikeout totals. The velocity has gone up considerably since being moved to the bullpen. It's even up a tad bit this year above where the hot gun would be if that was the issue. I think I like Iglesias. I was never a Blake Trinan guy. I was surprised he got the role. I always kind of felt Kota Glover wasn't going to get the role because it's Dusty Baker, and he hates young guys. Obviously he wasn't going to get the role. At the end of the day, I think Iglesias holds on to save opportunities longer. I think the Nationals are a team looking to compete, and they are going to go out and get someone. If Trinan fails, if Kelly fails, and even if they're somewhat successful, I still think at the deadline they go out and get someone, a Daniel Robertson or someone like that, to finish out the season, because they are a team that wants to compete now with Bryce Harper free agency looming. All right, that is going to end it for us today. Andy, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me back. Pleasure to be here.
Definitely. We're definitely going to have you back on again. Definitely go check out Andy's stuff over at Fantrax. Give yourself some plugs real quick and remind people where you can be reached on social media.
You can check me out on Twitter at People's Pen. That's People's with a Z. Check out Fantrax as well. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, please, if you don't mind. You can find that just by going to YouTube. /Fantrax. YouTube.com/Fantrax. You might have to put a C in between the YouTube.com/C/Fantrax. I'm not sure. But just search for Fantrax on YouTube. You can find us. Subscribe. Check out the baseball show live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m.
All right, Chuck. Why don't you tell people where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It. And I'm doing a new weekly column for the website called Of Note, which is going to be an in-depth look at both some player movement and at some ongoing strategy issues within fantasy baseball. So it'll be, like a page-long column, like three or four paragraphs of different things, quick hits, if you will. And I'm really looking forward to it. Mike Warner, in his Techie Greatness, is trying to help figure out how to get that posted today, but I think that will be posted every Wednesday on Friends with Fantasy Benefits going forward.
All right, you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFE. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review, and if it's of the 5-star variety, you'll be entered in to win some of our Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear. Give out some of it based on our favorite reviews and give out some of it based on just random 5-star reviews. Just like Garrett and Austin won a free Friends Fantasy Benefits t-shirt. So come and subscribe, obviously, but give us a rate and review because it really helps us out and you could be eligible to win something. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can read all my stuff over at FanGraphs or on FriendsFantasyBenefits.com. I'm doing 5 articles a week right now on FanGraphs, 4 daily notes, and then a regular article. Today was more of my fantasy ethics column, which is called The Unwritten Rules. So definitely check all of that out. And yeah, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Andy, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.